Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, boy, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Thank you.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again, this time on the near side, for another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had number shelves on it. And in the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
I made enough off you the other night to pay for it twice over.
Well, in that case, you owe me another drink.
Eddie, is it all right if I get personal?
What have you been so far?
Eddie, you're a born loser.
What's that supposed to mean?
First time in 10 years I ever saw Minnesota Fats hooked. Really hooked. But you let him off.
I told you, I got drunk.
Sure you got drunk. You had the best excuse in the world for losing. The trouble losing when you got a good excuse. And winning, that can be heavy on your back too, like a monkey. You drop that load too when you got an excuse. All you gotta do is learn to feel sorry for yourself. It's one of the best indoor sports, feeling sorry for yourself. Sport enjoyed by all. Especially the born losers.
Thanks for the drink.
What you really want to see is Black Wall Street. You want to see the Greenwood District thriving with hundreds of Black-owned businesses lining the streets of Greenwood. However, much of the property today does not belong to African Americans.
It's a gift to be able to say you come from such amazing people and that you're on the grounds of what used to be something the world had never seen before. I've always felt the connection to Black Wall Street and to rebirth it.
The Tulsa Massacre of 1921 destroyed nearly 200 businesses in the area that came to be known as Black Wall Street. Now, entrepreneurs and activists are pushing to carry on its legacy. They're advocating for more Black-owned businesses and property ownership amid gentrification that's reshaping the historic Black neighborhood. The Greenwood District of Tulsa, Oklahoma, was once a center of black wealth in the early 20th century. Located north of railroad tracks that divided Tulsa during segregation, it was home to thousands of black Tulsans and their businesses. But in 1921, white mobs attacked the district, killing dozens of black residents and destroying about 35 square blocks over the course of one night. Researchers say the damages filed in court cases decades ago total over $22 million in today's dollars. But this likely underestimates the actual losses, as not everyone had full insurance coverage or went to court. After the massacre, black entrepreneurs worked to rebuild Greenwood. But local historians say the district went through a decline as desegregation led to outward migration and urban renewal programs displaced black-owned businesses and residents. Today, Greenwood consists of about four city blocks. There's not much housing stock in the neighborhood, and just over two dozen black-owned or operated businesses remain registered with the Greenwood Chamber of Commerce.
The historic Greenwood Chamber of Commerce owns the last 10 buildings known as Black Wall Street. We house 33 businesses. 31 of them are African-American. So we're still doing what our ancestors did. It might not be Black Wall Street, but it's definitely a Black Main Street. And so we have to preserve this.
While there's a growing number of black-owned businesses in this district, some of the newer establishments are tenants in buildings owned by white developers. That's a reversal of fortune from 100 years ago when many of the property owners were black. The massacre destroyed real estate assets that could have been passed to future generations.
Our oldest living survivor, Daddy Clark, died at 109 years old. He was a teenager. His photograph is on exhibit in the gallery.
Tulsa residents like Michelle Brown Burdex say it's important to keep telling the story of how prosperous black residents of Greenwood were before its decline.
We were never taught that African Americans were business owners, that they were pilots and electricians and doctors and attorneys. And I was shocked that we had never learned about this. Being born in Tulsa, being raised in Tulsa, attending black history classes.
Brown Burdex coordinates educational programs and tours for the Greenwood Cultural Center.
We thought that this was the perfect time in the spirit of Black Wall Street to identify and promote black-owned businesses in our community.
As the city commemorates the centennial of the massacre, Brown Burdex has teamed up with a local co-working space and incubator to create a guide of black-owned businesses in the area.
When we first began this work, many people were opposed to us even acknowledging or recognizing the history of Black Wall Street or of the massacre. Now as we approach the commemoration, there is much more support.
It's clear things are changing again in the Greenwood neighborhood. A different museum, called Greenwood Rising, is among the construction projects redefining the look of the area.
It's a challenge because some of our work is quite similar, but we are finding ways that we can complement one another as opposed to competing with one another.
Oklahoma State Senator Kevin Matthews, who heads the commission overseeing Greenwood Rising, says the museum is working with organizations throughout the historic district to tell the neighborhood's story in cooperative ways. Still, Brown Burdex says her vision for Greenwood remains the same.
Personally, I would love to see more black-owned businesses in the Greenwood District. I would love to see home ownership increase in this area.
After being displaced by urban renewal projects decades ago, many black Tulsans now live in the city's north side.
Mm-hmm. This is my home, this neighborhood I grew up in.
Tyrant Billingsley II, a tech entrepreneur, recently learned about his family's ties to the rebirth of Greenwood in the 1930s.
What I know is little, but I do know that my direct descendants were cousins of people who helped donate to Vernon AME Church and help rebuild it.
Billingsley is now looking to carry on the spirit of Greenwood in his own way.
The actual district of Greenwood obviously is being heavily gentrified. I like to think of Greenwood as two different things. The body is the land in and of itself. And then there's the spirit or the breath The breath of Greenwood is the spirit, that black entrepreneurship, the sense of community. The breath of Greenwood is very much still alive.
Billingsley is spearheading a project he hopes will bring opportunities for today's black Tulsans to create the kind of generational wealth seen decades ago on Black Wall Street.
Black Tech Street is an initiative to rebirth Black Wall Street as the premier black tech hub here in Tulsa.
Currently in its beginning stages, one aim of the project is to weave coding and other applicable skills into after-school programs for black children. Billingsley says he has about $1 million in verbal commitments and is working with partners to fundraise.
We have a goal of facilitating $1 billion worth of investment in this community over the next 10 years, you know, around six strategic pillars: entrepreneur support, narrative and communications, capital, workforce, infrastructure, and policy.
Other black entrepreneurs are interested in rebuilding wealth in this area, but some black Tulsans say the city must do a better job in reconciling with its past to protect the area's black institutions and businesses.
I want it to be so that an endowment is set up so that these buildings are maintained and that economic development can be fostered.
Hopefully, undoubtedly, we will have a conversation. We will see some type of real reparations take place. Black Wall Street, as it was in 1921 prior to the massacre, and as it was once it was rebuilt in the 30s and 40s and 50s, may never be again. But Black Wall Street is an idea. I appreciate the businesses that are here in the Greenwood District, and then we have the Greenwood Cultural Center. We remain here telling the story. We are actually looking forward to the next 100 years.
I Okay, today's podcast is titled 500 Texas, Freedmanstown, 619-768-2945. We got some guests for you this morning, plus we're taking calls. Now, yesterday we focused in on Oklahoma, and then we started, because it's the 100th year anniversary of Black Wall Street, and we just played a selection from the Gap Band, and they're from that neck of the woods in Oklahoma, and Gap stands for Greenwood, Archer, and Pine. Today we're going to go south of Oklahoma to the state of Texas, and that's why we have the title 500 Texas Freedmen's Towns. Texas, by far, has more, historically, more black. Well, first thing, let me explain what a, well, let me read it directly before we go to our phone lines here. What a freedman's village is, or a freedman's town. Let me read it so I won't give you, call it Freedman's Village, or Freedman's Villages, rather. They're also called Freedman's, where's something when you want it? Okay. Okay, I can't find what I want to read it yet. All right, let me paraphrase. Essentially, Freedman's Villages, or Freedman's Colonies, or Freedman's Towns, the majority of them were set up after slavery. Some were done before slavery was abolished, but the majority of them after slavery. And in the state of Texas, Texas has or had over 500 of these freedmen's villages. Some call them freedmen's towns. Some call them freedmen's colonies, that were established in the state of Texas. That's quite a few. Now, on our Blog Talk scrolling marquee today, I've got just one image, and that gives you a map of these villages, where they were located. All right, so you got quite a few. Like I say, they were in total over 500, and I believe they're discovering more, you know, as the months go by or what have you. So today, now we're not going to, that's 500 is a whole lot, because like I said, they had over 500 in Texas alone. And I want to bring this up because I think, although it's the 100-year anniversary of Black Wall Street, but I think it's too much focus in on that one particular 40-acre patch of land in Oklahoma, although it was a horrific event, but hardly anybody talks about the 50 black municipalities, and they had other black communities that were unincorporated also at that time. And then virtually nobody talks about the 500-plus freedmen's villages, and that's a term that people need to pick up and learn, freedmen's villages or freedmen's colonies. These communities were set up, like I said, the majority of them, to my knowledge, okay, I don't know at all, was set up after slavery was abolished. And, they said, you know what, some people, some former slaves said, you know what, I don't have anywhere to go, so let me, let me work out a sharecropping deal. Many did that deal. But quite a few said, you know what, I got some money saved or what have you. And they bought, many of them bought acres of land and just started their own, some people call them settlements, some people call them colonies. Most were unincorporated, which is fine, but they started their own towns. So today, let me go to my first guest. Because we're going to, because that 500 is a lot. So, matter of fact, before I open up the phone lines to go to the guests, in Texas, station, I'm naming some of the 500, of course, that we'd be here all the rest of the week on if we did all 500. Barrett Station, Douglas Community, Texas Elm, which is, I guess, around Dallas, Texas. Ellis Alley around San Antonio, Elm Thicket around Dallas. We got a guest today that'll be speaking about the Fourth Ward, Freedmanstown. I guess that's what it was called, Freedmanstown, which is in the fourth, well, today known as the Fourth Ward in Houston. We'll get all the particulars on that in a few minutes here. Independence Heights, which was another freedom colony or village around Houston, either around or in Houston, Texas. Kennelton, Little Egypt. As a matter of fact, let me just call out Little Egypt, Texas, Moore Station, Texas, Mosier Valley, Texas, Pelham, Texas, Payton, Texas, St. John's Colony or St. John's, Texas, Shankleville, Texas, Tamia, Texas, and then 10th Street. Well, the 10th Street historically, that's in the Dallas area. Like I said, there were over 500. Some of these are ghost towns today. Some of them still on the radar today. And then you have towns that are being verified that they did exist at one time. But Texas is number one. You know what's mind-blowing? I went to undergraduate school up in the Panhandle of Texas. It was West Texas State University when I went up in Canyon, Texas. Now it's West Texas A&M University, 17 miles of Amarillo. So I was there for four consecutive years, and of course we went up into Oklahoma too. And I never heard about any of these black communities at all. And I had quite a few friends still to this day that they had never heard of these places. So in any event, let's go to the phone lines here. Open up 346. Your mic is open. Good morning.
Good morning, L.A. How are you this morning?
I'm fine.
Good.
Oh, well,
man,
so
first
question. Okay. Besides the morning pleasantries, well, Houston's one of those, I mean, within Houston, I guess probably the most well-known, I don't know how you would classify it today, but Freedmanstown or the Fourth Ward, most people might know about that, and they don't know about the 499 other places that were similar to that in Texas. So you live in Houston, so you got a last name Houston. So tell us what you know before we go further.
Okay, is the other guests on that, are they online?
I believe so.
Yeah.
I just opened
up
her mic. Yes,
oh,
ma'am.
Okay.
Thank
you,
Ms. Hall, for coming on. Yes.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to let her do most of the talking because, you know, she knows better than I. But one thing I can say about, I'm going to say this even before I even respond to it, and I encourage everybody, and we tend to have this habit. I have a friend of mine from New Orleans. His name is R.W. Bray. He's in the Air Force. He's originally from New Orleans. His mother was a Black Panther. And I invited him several years ago to come speak at one of my events that I had at the Shrine. And he puzzled me with the history and the knowledge he knew about Houston, Texas, and me living here. Growing up here, didn't even know it. And so we tend to do that, the same thing like with New Orleans. If you go to New Orleans and you go to the French Quarters, well, most of the natives there would tell you, you know, well, we don't do that. That's a thing for people who's coming to for entertainment, but we don't do the French Quarters. And same thing, we had Six Flags Astroworld over here that eventually closed down because the people of Houston did not go and visit. That's mainly for people coming out. So I encourage people on that to be more involved with the history of where you are, where you come from. And with that, you know, we have a book for those who may be listening in the Houston area, called the Little Red Book of Houston, that was written in about 1915, which lays out a lot of the black wealth in this city. And so anyway, one thing I can say about Fourth Ward is that basically it was the first African-American community in this city. You had Wards 1, 2, 3, and 4 that started out the city of Houston, I think somewhere around about 1839, 1840, somewhere around there. And it was established by people like the Reverend Jack Yates, who was actually considered the first African-American preacher in this city. So it has a lot of rich history, and I'm gonna yield, and you can come back to me and yield to your second guest, Miss Gladys House, who has been a resident of Fourth Ward, grew up in Fourth Ward, an activist in Fourth Ward, and matter of fact, I think she was also instrumental, in which she'll be able to tell you more about that, when they wanted to remove the bricks that were actually laid there by the founding African-Americans, which laid bricks in the streets. So she was involved with possibly putting a halt on it. But I'm going to yield, and I'll come back.
Okay, and now before we go to Ms. House, let me read. I found a definition I was looking for. Freedmanstown. Freedmanstown. Towns, well, that's what it is, are historically African-American municipality, also known as Freedman's Town, Freedman's Towns, or all black towns, are municipalities which were established for and predominantly African-American populace. Many of these municipalities were established or populated by freed slaves, either during or after the period of legal slavery in the United States was abolished in the 19th century. And Houston leads the state of Texas leads the way across the United States with the most activity of former slaves getting together and building their own towns that took many different shapes and forms. The Fourth Ward in Texas, I guess that's what it's known by today. But anyway, Ms. House, thank you for coming on this morning. And
well, thank you for inviting me.
Us?
And thank you, hey, Brother Warren Houston, who made this possible. But, yeah, my name is Gladys House L. I reside in the heritage of Freedmanstown, Fourth Ward, Houston, Texas. And when the guest was listing communities, he forgot to mention Sunnyside, Texas. Sunnyside, that in southeast Houston, mm-hmm. is also a heritage Moorish American neighborhood. Our heritage has been made a lie. Our entire estate as a people was stolen from us. Our land, our culture, even our minds. I know you have limited time on the show, and I won't be able to get into it.
Oh,
but
we got plenty of time. We got over an hour.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Our people, as Moorish Americans, not Negro, colored, black, and all that foolishness that Caucasians came up for us, they changed our names so that they could steal our land. But we've always owned land. And whenever you would see one of our people or many of our people lynched, hanging from wherever they were property owners. The Caucasians knew not to just get anybody off the street, but just about everybody they lynched was a property owner. Now, my neighborhood of Freedmanstown is the largest historic district of its kind in North America on the federal, state, and local level, and even an international designation by UNESCO, which is, you know, the United Nations. We received that designation in 2019. However, our brick streets of Andrews and Wilson are always under constant attack because in our historic district, which was 40 core blocks, but really we included the whole community, but the downtown attorney who wanted to help us, she volunteered and everything, but we had no idea that she would reduce our entire community to just 40 core blocks. Okay, so that sort of opened the door for developers to further penetrate and consume the heritage of Freedmanstown. Our brick streets are more than 100 years old, of course. Andrews and Wilson Street, but people don't remember West Dallas Street. It was also our brick street. But the city of Houston stole and committed a federal offense, millions of bricks on West Dallas Street between Wilson and Heiner Street, okay, and which is a federal offense because the U.S. Department of the Interior and the National Trust says any time a brick in a historic district is removed from the street, that's a $100 fine per brick. And millions of bricks were stolen from our community by the city of Houston. And some of the elected officials placed our bricks in their driveways, in this Caucasian area of Montrose, along the sidewalk, starting at Montrose and ending at Shepherd along Richmond Avenue. And it's just really horrific that we have a mayor who's, I guess, black face and white skin because he has fought us every step of the way. He has demolished 7 historic buildings just during his 6th year, going into 7th year of tenure as mayor. So he's lied to us all these 6 years about how he's for preservation. However, he continues to do just what the developers want him, and that is to wipe out Freedmanstown. Freedmanstown today is 50% its original size, okay? It wants, well, I can give you the streets, but your listening audience may not be aware, but I'll just leave it at, you know, 50% of its size because it's 2.5 square miles circumference now when it was originally 5 miles circumference. And our people, the mayor has done everything. He's even set up organizations to overlook our grassroots organizations and to fund them, and they work against us. But this is amazing how our own people here in Houston who are in positions of authority, and you have to have authority before you can have power, to help us, but a hindrance. That's all. We had to fight the mayor, as Brother Houston stated earlier, from trying to destroy our brick street. I had to run out there when a bulldozer was got started early in the morning. And one of my neighbors who lived closer to the noise came to me and brought it to my attention. And so I had to run out there. They had just really dug it up, a lot of it. But I had to actually stand in front of the bulldozer and tell them, man, you better stop this because you're making a career decision, okay? And you're going to go back to Mexico where you came from, and I know you don't want that. So they stopped and got the media out there in our community, and we finally got things rolling on the right track. But when the mayor called me into a meeting at the last minute, a few weeks after that, I realized that when I returned, I eased out of the meeting because it doesn't take you long to find out that something is up, something is very wrong. So I eased out of the meeting claiming that I was going to the restroom shoot. I went back to my community, and the mayor's contractor was trying to put some bricks in from Kansas City. I said, well, you got our bricks here. Our bricks are so original that it's difficult to destroy them, okay? And so these cheap bricks were bought in, and so once again, the media were called out, and that project was halted because it was just really all kinds of strategies this mayor, Sylvester Turner, uses to wipe out our community. And we're celebrating the commemoration of 6 of our ancestors who fought so hard for our neighborhood and for the children and businesses and families and so forth. And so we're going to unveil street signs depicting each of the 6 in different locations where they were very active or where they lived or where they operated their business or organization. And the mayor, the city's departments, various departments have given me a runaround, wanting me to reduce the signs to less than half the size of existing street signs. I said, why? when in Chinatown in Southwest Houston, the signs are the same size and in their language, the Chinese language. And I said, well, your sign would be too top heavy. So you're saying that the wind will blow in Freedmanstown and not in Chinatown? I said, that's ridiculous. I said, what other excuses do you have? And then they said, oh, well, the management district paid for the signs. I said, sir, we already paid for our own signs, okay? We're just letting you all know we're going to put them up. And they said, well, you know, you have to. So it's just been ridiculous, the little simple things that this mayor, who, I mean, well, I don't want to use too much time on him, but we do have a website of, if you go to www.freemantown.com, it's no S in Freedman's on this website because someone else had already taken it. We are attacked from so many angles that it's really just unbelievable. Even in getting my house rehabbed from Harvey, and you know how long ago Harvey's been, 4 years ago? I have been on delay for 2 additional years by the General Land Office. I said, wait a minute. Developers, Caucasian developers, build and destroy housing in my neighborhood at will. But yet you all want to run a fine-tooth comb through my just getting my house rehabbed, not rebuild. They won't try to tear it down. I said, no, you're not tearing down my heritage. Uh-uh. Because, see, they don't know that I used to build houses. So, okay. You know, I said, no, this can be rehabbed and no demolition. So, and I said, by the way, y'all need more contractors. So out of several contractors, it's only one that is our people, a Moorish American brother from New Orleans, but they are not giving him the business. So I've been really stirring up a whole lot of crap, a lot of injustices, so that we can try to get help from our people, because our state representatives here are pathetic. Our U.S. Congress people here are an embarrassment. And even our federal elected senators, they could care less. They won't even meet with us. So it's just really our people could turn this city around tomorrow if they united. I'm serious, brothers, and the listening audience. But it's a type of enslaved mentality because, see, our people were never slaves. Let's get that straight. Now, some were enslaved eventually by coming over to this country, but Moorish Americans, we've always been here since the beginning of time, and longer than 385,000 years. And the place they call the Alamo in San Antonio, that was one of our first mosques, believe it or not. But see, they don't tell you that, like Brother Houston mentioned, and you mentioned too, that you talked to some of your colleagues and asked them about historic towns or villages, and they said, oh, no, we don't remember that, or, you know, it's been erased from the memory. Or just the mind of the existence, period. So that is why we must research, do the knowledge, and find out who we really are. We really must. And I have many books about how our people invented everything. There's nothing new under the sun. That's where the term comes from. And so as more, I guess every time the Caucasians look at Freedmanstown, they just get upset. It's still one remaining inner city indication of Moore's presence, and we've got to try to wipe it out. And no, I don't think so, because not only is the universal creator has me on assignment, but so do our ancestors. They watch everything we do, and we better realize this. Because we think once they transition or die, we think that's the end of it. No. We must go back to our ancestry, our heritage, and have altars and libraries in our homes so that we can put up a picture of that family member who transitioned. Because if you don't, they die a second time. So it's so much around us, so much heritage around us, that it's just amazing when you look at the architecture. Sister Seashack invented architecture, okay? when you look mm-hmm. at every building. You know how they have an apex?
Yes.
When you walk the streets during the sunny day, you can just see the reflection on the ground of a pyramid. When I mean, everywhere you turn, it's us. But we've been brainwashed to think that we're nobody, that the Caucasian has created everything he's for. No, he's the biggest thief on the planet. You cannot beat any criminology or criminal activity that he does. Okay, you can't beat him at it. But there is no statute of limitations on fraud and crime. So we must begin to do the knowledge on who we really are and then begin to move forward to it, because we all are nationality of Moorish Americans. Okay, we're not colored Negro, Black, and all of that. And the Reconstruction era is really the meaning of how the Caucasian changed all of the books and everything to reflect him as the premier intellectual and inventor and creator. That's what the Reconstruction was really all about. Emancipation never meant freedom. Never. It meant going from private ownership. It's a business deal. From private ownership to public ownership. You see what I'm saying? So mm-hmm. it's unfortunate that our people perpetuate the lies to keep our people in the death state that they're in. And they wonder why our children want to drop out of school and this and that. Well, hey, if you always pumping up a lie to them, but the spirit of our ancestors are in them saying, no, that's not true what they're teaching you or misteaching you, miseducating you in school. So our children need to know where to go to get the truth. It's not in rap music. It's not in these games, the video games, but all of those are what I call artificial interferences. They interfere, they block the our people doing the knowledge. So when I say the knowledge, the truth on who we are and what we need to do to change and protect our people and generations to come, because our people are strung out on all types of medications and this and that. Our people even bring wolves into their homes because they've seen Caucasians do it. Y'all call them dogs and puppies and stuff, but they're wolves, okay? And, I mean, we just, our people just want to emulate what the Caucasian is doing, which is madness. You know, and all this stuff about taking the COVID shot, the vaccine, and this and that. How many people realize, one, that the Caucasian who, Fauci, his mother was Mother Teresa, who sold more than 25,000 children to pedophiles for sacrifices and all of that. But the media would only show you the side, oh, Mother Teresa, she helped so many children, poor children. No, uh-uh. This is why he's an expert on trying to wipe out people with these vaccines. And believe it. Believe this. He gets a percentage on every vaccine that is administered, okay? So he's the market face, the market man of pushing this poison among our people. And you know it's got to be bad anytime they are hosting a lottery for people to go and be injected with that poison, okay? Some folk have taken two shots and still have the so-called COVID, no. Y'all better realize, you waiting about 6 months to a year. It'll be like, you know, Hollywood, people give Hollywood a bad rap, well, which is well-deserved, but it will let you know ahead of time what's getting ready to go down. And so when you look at the movie that Will Smith stars in, I Am Legend, mm-hmm. and a couple other movies, you see where after this so-called doctor lied on national TV about, oh, yeah, well, we got the cure for cancer. And they said with less than 3 years later, 80% of the people had died. And about less than a million were still surviving, and another 400,000 was going around eating up other people. You see? So we had better be careful about all these contraptions lies and deceptions that come about. And with Bill Gates, who's been kicked out, divorced from his wife, well, he was born a girl. I mean, you see how they do all this old crap and perpetuate a man who's really a woman. It is insanity. So we had better stop trusting these politicians who are nothing but liars and front men for the very enemy that's wiping out our people. And that's how we ended up in the position we're in now, okay? So Freedmanstown, and forgive me if I got off my little soapbox on Freedmanstown, we continue to celebrate and acknowledge our heritage in all means possible, no matter what the mayor or who the mayor sends after us. And on June 16th, 2021, which is a Wednesday at 4 p.m., we will have our street sign unveiling to honor our six ancestors. There are more, but these six really stood out, and we're going to continue to recognize others from the heritage communities around Houston, some of which you mentioned, Independent Heights, as well as Acres Homes. I don't know if you mentioned Acres Homes, but we've already recognized Sunnyside. And so we are thanking our people now, or while they're here with us on this side, for the commitment and dedication that they make citywide. You know, in different communities in our own little way, because whenever Freedmanstown fights, it's never just for Freedmanstown, but it's for the justice and humanity of all of our Moorish American communities here.
Let me ask you this, Gladys. Was, like, I'm reading about Sunnyside right now and looking at the pictures and whatnot. Was Sunnyside and Freedmanstown, 4th Ward, were they originally within the city limits of Houston, or did the city of Houston expand to those particular areas?
Well, for Sunnyside, Acres Home, Independent Heights, yes, the city eventually gobbled them up because in 1921, the western boundary of Freedmanstown, which is Taft Street today, that's where the city of Houston limit stopped, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Freedmanstown is in the 4th Ward, and see, the wards were established in 1836, okay? And then eventually, you know, they were established. So that's how you get the divide, or, you know, the different categorization of the inner city areas as compared to the rural areas.
This is totally fascinating. Like I said, I was down there for 4 years in college, and some of my friends were from Houston, but for some reason, I was totally I didn't know that Houston had that. I heard of the 4th Ward before, but I didn't realize Texas, the state of Texas, had so many communities or towns or villages, whatever you want to call them. It's simply prolific. The number that are there. Now with free. Now what's going on with Freedom Town? Well, the 4th Ward today, as they call it.
Okay, now let me clarify. 4th Ward is a very large area. Freedmanstown is in the extreme northeast sector of 4th Ward, because you have Montrose 4th Ward, River Oaks 4th Ward, University Place 4th Ward, which today are all Caucasian areas, okay? But
were they formerly black and they were gentrified or what?
Well, the land was stolen from our people. Even, you know, River Oaks, Loving Canada, University Place. Again, brothers and listening audience, we owned all the land, okay? In Southwest Houston, all of, you know, Fort Bend County today, Sugar Land, all of, we owned, I don't care where you name it, we owned it, and the land was stolen from us. just as land was stolen from portions of Freedmanstown when Italians came to Freedmanstown at the turn of the 20th century and began to, they were so-called discriminated against by Caucasians. And so, therefore, they moved into Freedmanstown, opened little mom-and-pop stores, and began extending a line of credit. And the property owners of Freedmanstown had to put up the deed as collateral. Well, when it came time to pay off the tab was much more than the initial agreement. So, therefore, the Italian would hold on, keep the deed to the land. And that's how they eventually began to accumulate so much land in Freedmanstown. But then there was still a substantial percentage of Moorish American-owned property owners in Freedmanstown.
Okay. All right. Boy, this is fascinating.
I just want to add, like she was talking about, the Houston started off with, you know, First Ward, Second Ward, Third Ward, and Fourth Ward. And as she mentioned, the areas that the Fourth Ward extended to, like you're talking about River Oaks. River Oaks is, we call that old money. Galleria River Oaks is pretty much one of the richest, if not the richest area in the city. And River Oaks is the same area where Ali was not, Muhammad Ali wanted to buy a home in River Oaks, and they would not sell it to him. So that's that area. But Freedmanstown, as we know it today, the Fourth Ward, a lot of that area they are developing, and they've even changed the name of it Fourth Ward to Midtown. And so you have a lot of businesses and clubs and all that kind of stuff and restaurants and things in that area that used to be known as Fourth Ward is now known as Midtown.
But you know,
what about education? Are the younger people being taught about the history of these communities?
Well, I do all I can, brothers. In fact, I met with the new principal. The thing today in Houston is principals in elementary schools, and Gregory Lincoln is K-8. Don't keep the principals longer than 2 years, okay, so that there will be no bonding of the students to the principal like during our years when we were in high school. The second thing is I met with the new principal last week, and I presented a book that I mentioned that blacks invented everything. The only thing the Caucasian invented was the patent office, so he could steal all of our inventions or to take credit for them. Another book I presented to the principal was When the World Was Black. And so they were taking pictures and writing notes and stuff. I said, oh, I'd like to volunteer to teach the pre-K, you know, the K through second graders, give them an early start since they don't get it at home about who they really are. Because in my youth program, because I teach youth carpentry, how to build, you know, dog houses and things like that, how to use tools and so forth. And one of the students asked, so white people are not better than we are? I mean, you know, he really felt that Caucasians were better. And I said, well, no, we're the original people. There's no discussion about who's better, whatever, because how can you defeat being original? Everybody else is hybrid. We're the only people with hair, the only people with skin. Everybody else has leather. Everybody else has fur. Come on now. Forget about the TV commercials where the Caucasian is slinging that fur, calling it hair. It's not a put down to anybody. It's stating the truth. And why are you so concerned about insulting folk who constantly live a lie against us? Living our heritage or whatever. Drive through River Oaks, as Warren mentioned earlier, and see all of the architecture that our people invented, all of the wealth that was stolen, all of the land that was stolen from us. That's ours. So, but if we have been not taught from grade school up Even now, the truth about who we really are, and that's when all of the truth comes, 360 degrees. You won't miss anything. Then you say, oh, okay, then I'm like, well, let me take back my state. And you can do it. So in any event, I hope I answered your question.
Okay. Let's see. Now, how many total, I guess, Freedmen's towns or villages were right down in that neck of the woods? You got Sunnyside, you got Freedmanstown, you got anything else?
Well, in the wards, keep in mind now our people were in the inner city, but the Caucasians or the whites, as y'all call them, but you have to spell whites, W-I-G-H-T, not W-H-I-T-E. See, they even twisted that on us, okay? No, look up the definition of W-I-G-H-T, and that's what you're referring to, who it really is. But, yeah, the inner city was all us, okay? And then you had the rural areas, as you mentioned, you know, we call them rural areas or suburban areas, suburbia, whatever at that time. But then you had, you know, the little areas, towns, you know, they weren't all named Freedmanstown. They were just named, you know, down Sunnyside, Acres Home, Independent Heights, Galena Park, Fidelity. So those are areas, you know, kind of distant, a little distant
right.
from Houston, outside Houston.
Yeah, because I'm figuring if people don't, you know the heritage and the history and all that, because, like I say, I'm just simply amazed that these people had, I mean, they were highly, what's the word I'm looking for, resilient.
Something had to happen. You know me, I believe in first step as responsibility and accountability. You talk about Acres Home. Acres Home at one time was a thriving black community. They had their own bus service out there. But, I mean, today Acres Home is riddled with crime and drugs. And, you know, it's a sad situation from what it used to be. And so with me, the way I look at things is we have to somewhere as a people look back and ask ourselves what happened, what part of what role did we play in things being the way they are now? Because when you look at it again, you're talking about Acres Home, which was a thriving black community at one time. You're talking about Sunnyside. Sunnyside even went down as one of the most dangerous places in not in the state of Texas, but in America. Sunnyside went on their list, was on that list. You know, and so when you look at that,
you think integration had something to do with this?
Integration
from highly self-reliant to integration to people getting involved with too many entitlement programs.
Well, you said the right thing when you started talking about entitlement. When you look at integration had a good point as well as a bad point. The bad thing about it is that we integrated, but then we left our own, and we fell for maybe, as they say, the white man's ice is colder than the black man's ice. But at the same time, it opened up doors and brought us into places that we probably would have never gotten into had we wouldn't have dealt with integration. So that's like a double-edged sword when you talk about integration. But if you want to talk about entitlement programs and things of that nature, I think that had more of an effect on where we are today, because you always hear me talk about the Booker T. Washington area as we are 100 years now from the Tulsa race riots, to where you're looking at people who had been removed from slavery no longer than about 50 years, and they were able to create millionaires and people to run a whole town of, and you knew everybody that was around you were of color. So if they could do that within a 50-year time from being removed from slavery, what is wrong here in 2021 in the situation of people of color? What's wrong? Something is wrong.
Right. Your thing is law. I'm thinking that the people back then in Texas, the black ones, were more, I would call, law literate then than they are now. I think that's a part of it. It might not be the silver bullet, but Because, like, they built their own communities.
Well, may I add something? Can y'all hear me?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. First of all, when we look at going back to interracial civil rights movement, the civil rights movement is a consumer rights movement, okay?
Mm.
And therefore, because our people were still thriving even during depression and all of this and that, and that's one of many reasons why the Caucasians bombed Wall Streets, Black Wall Streets everywhere. And because they said, we're struggling during the depression, and these Negroes are still doing well. So this is when they had to get our dollars to come over and support their business, their economy. And when Thurgood Marshall was promised a seat on the Supreme Court, he changed his position. You know, when the Dahl test, he intentionally left out the test of the Dahls, the Black Dahls, in the areas of our people that showed that the students favored the Black Dahl. He only ended, you see when we go into these white areas or whatever, in Massachusetts and stuff, they favor the white dog, so it's best that we go ahead and integrate these schools and this and that. And so it really was not a good intention for Thurgood Marshall, who really hated Malcolm X and hated Dr. Martin Luther King. He was just anti betterment of our people. It was only about himself. What could Thurgood Marshall get out of it? I'm telling you how it is. Do the knowledge on it, people. Okay, I know some of y'all may be in love with Thurgood Marshall or his so-called legacy, but you got to do the knowledge. So this integration has many avenues to it, because the whites had no more money and they needed ours. And then when our people said, no, we're going to continue to do our own thing. Well, the Caucasians said, well, we're going to show you, or we're going to tear up, blow up everything you have, and that way you have no choice but to bring your money over to our businesses. So, and we're going to steal your land, and we're going to do everything we can to make you so disadvantaged that you have no choice but to come our way. So, yeah, integration, even if it wasn't on the books, it was still something pushed by all entities to get our money and get control of our land and control our education.
Well, you didn't open up another podcast. We might have by Friday. I got a paradigm shift when you said it, consumer rights versus civil rights. I never thought about it that way, but you're right on the money with that one.
Oh, yeah.
Look, let's take a quick break here. We'll be back in a couple minutes.
People keep talking about how the world is going to come to an end. And I wonder, in these days and these times, if anybody...
People keep talking about how society is falling down today. And as hard as I try not to listen just to what them folks got to say, but you know, I just can't help but look around and see we digging our own grave. And there's just one thing I want to know. Can anybody be saved? Can anybody
be saved?
Anybody be saved? Can anybody
gonna
be saved? Why don't you save me? Save me, Lord. Save me, Lord. Can anybody be saved? Well. Save me, Lord.
be just another day. Would the air I breathe be better if I'm not around you? Will the man be spared who spoke the truth? Cause he never did abuse it.
From the vow. As long as I wanna be saved, how can I be free in my mind? As long as I'm a slave, is anybody gonna be saved? Is anybody gonna be saved? Oh, save again.
Came here, or they were brought here, some say even by the Moors,
you know, because of how the Moors was running Europe. And these were disagreeable entities, and they figured they brought them here to the wilderness and to where the stronger people were, that they could recondition the minds of these corrupt, beastly people. But anyway, I don't want to go too far with that, but my point is, once they got control of this land, that's when all the world wars started. You know, they went throughout the world. You know, Hitler was half German, Ashkenazi, and half German or whatever, but it's just so much information that we really need to strive to study and find out what really happened to cause where we are today. You know, but overall, think about it. Over here, they had the Civil War. Then once they got control of this land here, they started World War. They went throughout the world attacking everybody that had melanated skin and kinky hair. That's when they incorporated a lot of different lands. And if you can find a map of the Americas before the 1400s, you'll see that most of the places that they named in other countries is on that map here. Cairo, Moab, all of them places were here. Israel, Jerusalem, all of those places is already here. But I just wanted to put that out there and salute you and the family for what you're doing this day.
All right, thank you, Ed. Let's see, let's go to Warren or Gladys, any comments?
Yeah, I just want to clarify also, and I really appreciate the brother sharing the knowledge, that the Civil War was about freeing Caucasians. Do the knowledge. I tell you, that Caucasian is a master at lying and twisting words. That Civil War was not about freeing our people. We were already here. So what you don't realize is that our people enslaved Caucasians for 360 years. Do the knowledge, okay? So, but when they, going back to Reconstruction, when they changed, the Caucasians changed all the rules of the game, the books and all of this and that, to put himself up as being the main, the premier entity, race, whatever you want to call it. But, yeah, the Civil War was, and I just touched on that since the brother, the caller, had mentioned the Civil War. I just wanted to let our people know that even the flags that are flown, the Confederate flags and this and that, those were some of our flags, too. Here in Houston, there is a city councilwoman, Abby Kamen. She is a member of the Daughters of the Confederacy. Anti-Moorish American group. They just pro, I mean, everything, the good old South, the way that they would want it, okay? But the way their books would lie and talk about how it was glorified and this and that. And believe me, nothing that she does is surprising. We don't expect to get any support from her, okay? But you need to do the knowledge. If you got internet, use it for the right reasons to get information. If you don't have a library in your home, as Moors used to have, a library and an altar, as I mentioned earlier, because we really need to stop all this foolishness and find out who we are instead of trying to identify with a dead entity known as the Caucasian. Okay? We are the original people. Why would we want to step down to be a hybrid? Sorry.
Well, I forgot what I was looking up, was it yesterday? No, it was the day before yesterday. I forgot what I was looking, something dealing with, the anniversary of Black Wall Street, so. And I knew about the Fourth War, but I didn't know that there were over 500 freedmen's villages or towns in the state of Texas. So three days ago, I didn't know nothing about that.
Well, make sure you detail, look at the true meaning of freedmen's. It really meant education, but there was a term twisted to mean, they are free from being enslaved now or being slaves, and they're free men. See, it's Hollywood. And so our people, you know, when you do the knowledge, it takes you back to Moorish-owned land, all of this. That's why Texas is a republic.
Before the state of Texas became the state of Texas, like I guess when Mexico had control of that land?
Yeah, even Moorish in the beginning, brother, that y'all not did okay. Our stutter. We owned it all, okay? Even when so-called Mexico and Texas, because they were all together at one time anyway, you have to really do the research and you see a whole different map, like the brother, the caller stated, all of the different countries that he, Palestine and Israel, all of that, that was all here. See, that was a climatic divide that separated the land into continents,
mm-hmm.
okay? So therefore, but if you put the pieces together, if you look at a map, I don't care if it's MacArthur's map or the other map or whatever, they say everything is upside down. But anyway, it fits like a puzzle. So it says, wait a minute now, but you got to get the original maps, what they're teaching you in public school, what they taught you in public school, even college today. It's all projection. And what is projection? A lie. Okay? And that's all the Caucasian does is project his viewpoint while diminishing or hiding ours.
Okay. Let's take keep everybody's mic open. Let's go to 314 area code. Your mic is open.
Ellie, you done a show on Moors, and they weren't all black, right?
Oh, somewhere in the archive. Yeah. I did one show, at least one show on that, yeah. And
yes, it was a history. But, you know, you talk about the Freeman. That term came about when the government got the creek, the Muscovy Creek, and those members of the five civilized tribes to release their slaves, which was African. And they created a Freedmen's Bureau when after those people died out, the Bureau was dissolved. Now, I think later on they might have brought it back. The members of those tribes was pushed out of, well, they was bought out. Then required, they left. And the Muscovy Creek went and occupied what you call the panhandle of Texas. And by the way, the Chickasaw and the Creek, and I believe the Cheyenne, said they wasn't releasing their property unless you wanted to pay for it, which the U.S. government paid those two for releasing their property. And that occurred many times. It even occurred with the Spanish, too. But you talk about Wall Street, that area, and the street name was First North, really. It wasn't named Vine. That came about through later on, and it's been projected in songs and things like you paid. But many of the people, that was Muscovy Creek land that you formed, what you call Wall Street. And a lot of the people there was not black Americans. You had blacks that came out of black Americans that came and helped work on projects. Like you had people that come out of Chicago that worked mm-hmm. on those projects. But a lot of that occupants there was in Muscovy Creek. And they happened to be held black skin. And the skin, they was Muscovy Creek because they took on the lineage of their mother. The Creek society is a matrilineal. So if an African has produced a baby with a full-blown Creek female, that baby was Creek. It doesn't work the other way with matrilineal. And it's where people's getting this stuff mixed up. And another point, too.
Did we lose it?
And you still have a lot of those Lincoln, people that live in that area.
Yeah,
they still live there. They still live there with the land. You got the Allotment Act where they was – see, you don't own the land. The land is for all the tribe. but you can use the land. If you was Creek and you wanted 1,000 acres, then the council would give you 1,000 acres, but you didn't own the land. In those nations, just like it is in Africa, you don't own the land. Now, when those Indian tribes, for instance, the Creeks joined on with the Confederacy, something that they shouldn't have ever done, because when the Confederacy lost, they lost. And they had to come into terms under treaty with the government. You know, when you lose, you subjected to those that conquered you, that won the war. And the 1838 treaty set the standards for a lot of things. You had another treaty in 1866 also. So people saying that these are black Americans, well, that's not totally true. You got people that's got dark skin that folks like to claim as being black American, and they disregard.
I think, Bianchi, oh, you know, okay, funny your, thing. Your line cut it, cut up. Okay, go ahead. No, your line went out temporarily, but we can hear you.
Yeah. So, no, people don't take into their consideration. And that's the way it is. You know that guy you have in she was talking about the mayor of Houston. Yeah, he is kind of cantankerous, but I think he may be Creek, too. It may be the governor of Texas that's Creek. Maybe Warren can straighten
this
out.
Oh, the governor of Texas? The guy in the wheelchair?
I think Abbott is Creek. I'm not sure.
He's mixed up. He's definitely not just straight up Caucasian, Brother Warren.
Yeah, he's Brother Warren. That's Brother
Ellie.
He is Creek.
Oh, I guess he's going to. Yeah, so the caller is correct. But, you
but
know,
one
he
thing
wants
about
to keep that quiet, but it's very clear on that.
One thing about the mayor in Houston, he's a Democrat in a red state implementing stuff like abortion. LGBTQ, right? Higher taxes and stuff like that. He's a Democrat. So why'd you vote that Democrat in? You know, when you black skin and a Democrat, that's extra privilege among some people's mindset. But anyway, I just want to add that.
Okay. Warren, any comment?
Not at the moment. I'm listening, man. But good information is being shared.
Well, Bianchi was right on time because you go to land in Tulsa. Because my deal is I land in Tulsa and you go off the path to someplace like that. That's all Muskogee territory up in there.
You know something else, too. You know something else, too. When Sherman done that, Tecumseh Sherman and Secretary of War Stanton sat down and talked about that 40 acres and a mule.
Uh-huh.
That wasn't a land to give away. That land belonged to the Indians. You know, Indian is a legal term. It means that it's a person who are members of a recognized tribe. That's an Indian. That's a legal term. So he didn't have no right to give away Indian land, because if you say the whites stole it and the whites left during the war, then how are you going to take the land that they got from the Indians under whatever the circumstances was? Some of the circumstances were legal. But how are you going to take the land that they got from the Indians and give it to blacks? That's hypocritical.
Suppose the blacks were the Indians or are the Indians. See, we keep
Well, if they got the if they got dark skin, they not no longer, after generations, like I mentioned before. If you marry into one of those five civilized tribes, now I know for sure that the Creek had it and the Chickasaw, but the other ones had what's called quantum membership. In other words, you had to have over 50%, for instance, in the Navajo, 50% original blood to become a member of them. That's some of the disputes that's been going on with blacks trying to get some of the gaming revenue. And matter of fact, in 1979, the Creeks expelled all the blacks out of their society.
But what was the tribe in Gullah Geechee land, if anybody knows?
Blackfoot, Cherokee.
You're talking about the Carolinas.
Right, the Carolinas, because yes. that's where the 40 acres and the mule thing came up.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's why I was asking, what tribe was there?
Blackfoot, Cherokee was down here.
Well, essentially, like Piaki said, if they owned the land, the government couldn't give away the land owned by somebody else.
You're forgetting about Civil War again. The Civil War again, just like what the sister said. The Civil War, all right. Europeans were brought here by the Moors to work off their debt to Europe. All right, then you got to look at the Treaty of Peace and Friendship. In the Treaty of Peace and Friendship, it emphasizes that if the Aboriginal indigenous people of this land saw a ship in the waterways with a certain flag on it, no matter how many ships was in the wake of that first ship, we agreed not to go on those ships. It could have been soldiers and, you know, plagued people on all of those ships. See, again, it's unfortunate that we're not looking at the fact of what's the foundation. We're talking about corporations and contracts that was established between the Aboriginal, the indigenous people here, and the Europeans. And of course, this is a level of comfort because on certain levels, it brings about more responsibility to do deeper and deeper research. See, people were more comfortable going back to see who founded and created the New York Knicks than who their mother and father is, you know, who their real mother and father is. And it's okay. But, again, I don't have all the answers. I'm striving to put the puzzle together also. But one thing I do know is something that I always knew was I'm not an African American. I knew this when I was a baby. My grandmother didn't tell me this. You know, nobody told me this. I felt that because of the earth. It ain't no amalgamation or mixing between the so-called red man and somebody that was supposed to have been dragged over here on the bottom of a ship from Africa. No. No. The original people of the world, copper-colored, kinky hair. That Bible really talks about us. They grafted, just like what the sister said, they graft themselves into all things and get credit, and because of that old-time religion and songs and things like that, we have a level of comfort. Don't nobody want to hurt a child, and that's all a Caucasoid is. They aren't as old as us. If you listen to Dr. Youssef Ben-Yakinen, Dr. Henry Clark, all of them will tell you subtly how old Caucasians and Ashkenazis are. Most of them are mulattoes, but the original seed, the original stem, the root and the foundation of their existence on this planet is melanated people. You cannot make a melanated person from two Caucasians. You can make an albino from two melanated people. That's all I'm saying.
Well,
Moors,
you know,
whatever. In Latin, Moors mean love, mi amor. We never strive to kill them. They attacked us. There was always more. We had them 1,000-1 at one time. So why did they win? Because there was something wrong with us from the gate. I yield. Go ahead.
Let me ask you a question. When the lady said that we was here all the time, how did we get here, and who is the we? How did they get here?
How long we've been on this earth? Yeah, by boat.
No,
Europeans,
that
remember.
Ain't what I'm asking. How did?
Yes.
Well, look, man, you want to argue? I ain't got time to argue. Just forget about me asking that question at all. Let's go along with your program.
I am hyper, bro. I apologize.
Well, then if there's a place for that, then there's not a place for it.
You're right. You're right, Uncle. I apologize. It's just that this is something that means a lot to me because this is the only way we can fix the condition of the original people on this planet is for us.
Well,
to
the
honor
thing is, you know, sir, let me say something. I know John Henry Clark very well and Dr. Ben. I'm from that era. DNA sequences have proved a lot of what they was talking about as being wrong. They was good for the time and the technology at the time. But there's something that came along called DNA sequencing that says that's wrong. People say that Africans was here in the beginning, meaning that they came across the Bering Straits. Well, those were not Africans. They were where they came from. And here's another thing. The humanoids that started in the Great Lakes area was not fully human. They weren't human. You wouldn't want one in your house sleeping in your bed, would you? So when those people developed evolved. If they left out of Africa, Homo erectus left out and came back in, according to DNA sequences. When they left out, say, 400,000 years ago, they didn't walk straight to the Bering Straits. They went to one country, stayed thousands of years. They went to another country and stayed thousands of years. Well, they was no longer were they African. If you was born in California and 3 years old, you moved to Kansas City. Well, when you get 20, you ain't no Californian. You're a Kansas.
But, Beyonce, that's California would still be my root. California would still be my root, brother. Califia would still be my root. So I understand what you're saying, and just like, for example, the story of Tarzan, even though I'm using this as a demonstration, there was a white family, a European Caucasoid family, whatever you want, Caucasian family, excuse me, that was scientists, mother and father was some kind of scientist. They flew to Africa, caught a virus, or the plane crashed. Tarzan was supposed to have been raised by wolves in Africa, if there's such thing, or gorillas, right?
Well, there ain't no wolves in Africa, go ahead.
No, but that's one of the stories that they tell. But my point overall is, all the damage that he was doing in Africa, but then when they brought him back to Europe, he was accepted because of just like what you're saying, the story that was told. The story that was
You
told,
know what gives skin color, don't you?
Huh?
Your skin color comes from the environment that you live in. If
so
you live in a high ultraviolet ray environment, nature is going to give you that protection. Now, if you take that person off the equator and put them up above the 30th latitude, up in London, per se, then that protection you had when you were living on the equator is going to be a detriment to your life. You got to shed it. Human beings adapt to the environment that they're in. You know, one of the most, it takes time. Most of the most, and you know, people that live up in the northern regions, if you come out of Louisiana and go up in the northern regions, successive generations are going to get lighter and lighter and lighter.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the way nature works. Think about it. Anyway, go ahead, L.A. I'm sorry for delaying your program.
No problem. Good morning, you were saying?
Yeah, I was just kind of riding off what Bianchi was saying because I have kinfolks up in Buffalo, and these are people of color in Buffalo, New York, but there's a paleness to them coming up out of Buffalo, New York, you know, that environment that they live in. And even furthermore, like he was also expressing about you all where you came from, I was born in Dallas, Texas in 1971, but I've been in Houston ever since I was 3 years old. I'm about to be 50. So I don't relate to being a Dallasite. I relate to being a Houstonian. So I just wanted to add those points. I was listening to some pretty good conversation, and this is how the iron sharpens the iron.
Well, you know, and how far do we want to go back? I mean, I don't think you the concept of Pangea, the supercontinent.
Yeah.
Now, how far are we going to go back?
If that's what it takes, but that demonstrates how old. How old is Lucy? They found a body, yes, in Africa, but she's millions of years old. Now, I can't say if they did or not corrupt her features, but all I'm saying is she's still melanated, you know. See,
well, Lucy was an
But Lucy wouldn't be considered.
Lucy was an
ape. We're Homo sapiens. Okay.
Bro, can I just finish my comment before we go too far?
Sir, I'm sorry.
All I'm striving. No, it's all right, brother. It's all right, family. I love and appreciate we're one. It's just that, see, I've always had an open mind, you know, and I'm not knocking anybody for comfort. I used to get beatings from my mother because I would ask her questions about the Bible, and she's locked into Jesus, and that's fine. But the reality of it is I was reading that book before I was told to read that book, and there's certain things in that book that contradicts. So all I'm speaking to is I was always one that asks questions. It ain't about going to no university. It ain't nothing. Man is not learning by being told. You got to dig for yourself and see what it means and says to your spirit. It says that in that book. But anyway, there's certain things that don't make sense. Every time they find a so-called slave cemetery in the Americas, they don't do any tests on them. They don't let anybody but Smithsonian, who's agents, do tests on things and then tell you who they are. There is, in the Grand Canyon, there's a pyramid called the Temple of the Moon and the Stars and Isis. That pyramid, even though it's covered in rock, is older than the pyramids in Africa. They have Buddha statues in there. They have Shiva the Destroyer in there. They have a lot of things in there. And they also say that there's giant bones underneath that temple. Now, the only reason I'm bringing it up is because of the same things that they have in Africa and Asia, some of the oldest nationalities on the planet. They have those things here. The only reason why those statues weren't moved or destroyed is because they were too large. All I'm saying is just a little bit of research. Just Google Kincaid's Mountain. They found pieces of gold with Aramaic language on it, which is an African dialect, yes, which is also part of the Hopi language, on gold, and they said that that gold is thousands of years old. We are comfortable by some of the things that we find. I question everything. I don't believe nothing. You know, I stay up late at night just to see who Santa Claus was. I yield.
I spent at least 8-9 years, and I have to look at my passport and see exactly, over in what you call Egypt, going in and out of tombs, temples, pyramids, dig sites, where some of the artifacts test out to be as much as 65,000 years ago. Those people are not what you call Black Americans. That's a whole different thing. And people have to come to terms that just because a person's skin is black, like this girl in Japan, this lady in Japan, blacks are trying to claim her. That woman is Japanese. She is not a Black American because in their society it follows the matrilineal. She is what her mother was. And another point, if all human life began, which there's much evidence to show that it is, in one place, that would include whites today. Because they would have acquired melanin in the environment that they grew up in or finally settled in. I hear people that's truly mulatto, and they down and talk against their very biological makeup as if they got something in them tearing them apart. I mean, that goes back to the Bible with who was fighting in the womb?
Esau and Jacob.
Esau and Jacob. One was hairy, and the other was red and smooth.
That's right.
But anyway.
But listen to what you said. Let me just say this to what you said, Bianchi. You said that there's Japanese people that are dark-skinned. But they are Japanese. Again, you're demonstrating that melanated people were everywhere. Same thing with China. Same thing with Hindustan, the original Hindus. They had kinky hair. Most of them are still, even though they got a caste system now, most of them were melanated. It ain't about America as much as it is about the footprint of the melanated person is all I'm saying. That's all the thing I was speaking to. So,
what about the Eskimo?
I was just demonstrating.
Eskimo darker than Eskimo are darker than they darker than Barack Obama, but they don't consider themselves no African Americans. They say they're Eskimo.
Oh, you're African American, black, white, and all that. Those are political terms used in this country. You might have some of that in England or South Africa, but basically, they're political.
Thank you, LA.
Now, if you really want to know something, study what Africans, you know, Africans got rid of their riffraff, which was a lot of those that came on the boats here. Nobody
gets
rid of something that's good.
a lot of people, that's right, a lot of people in Africa say that the American blacks, that's the term they use, are not African, because some of them do know. You know, the only reason why I brought up Dr. Ben and Henry Clark is because of the fact that some of their lectures, they emphasize how old melanated people are and how young Caucasians are. That's the reason why I brought them up. It ain't about...
Well, you're right. If you look at the skin color, it has been recent in the history of time when you had somebody with lily white skin. It's because of where they have evolved to become that way. If you take them and put them, you know, Teresa Hines Carey is African too, right? And her skin is white. Or she was born in Africa.
There's a lot of European Caucasians that say that they are African American. Why? Because they were born in Africa and they moved to America. So they call themselves, and some of them will say that. If anybody's an African-American, it's me. Just like what Trump said. Trump said about that Caucasian lady, I think she works for the government, she said she is not an Indian. I've been to Indian reservations, and none of the Indians that I've seen look like her. You can say that and say, well, maybe he's talking about the red ones, but all I'm saying is if you go back before 1492, you'll see, just like in Columbus's own documents, he says he thought he was in India. If you go into India before the 1700s, you'll see that all of the Indians were dark-skinned before they had the battle with the British. That's all I'm saying.
Spanish first. But, you know, Columbus never said he was discovered in America. Matter of fact, Columbus, three navigators of his three ships, the Pinta, the Santa Maria, and I forget what the other one is, were the Nino brothers who were supposed to have been Moors. It was black. So if he was lost, it was because of their navigation. Just like you had African chiefs brought Africans to the Americas to take advantage of the free land coming out of Sierra Leone, and they started rice farming there in the Carolinas, something they had been doing in the Sierra Leone, Senegal, Gambia region. So it's very interesting history when people really look at it. But the thing that's really making a difference is DNA sequencing. And you know that in America, blacks have about 3% of Neanderthal genes. In Africa, they have no traces or hardly little of Neanderthal genes. And people wonder how that is. Well, when Homo erectus migrated out of Africa, they made it with Neanderthal, which was more so in Asia than in Europe, according to the evidence. And then those people came back in, a lot of them ended up over here. But anyway, I'm going to let L.A. get back to his program. I'm sorry.
All right, well, you had a comment. Go ahead. Gladys, you still here? Gladys?
I apologize.
She might be gone.
All right, what I want to say is this. This one landmass right here is the least known about it. You know, just like, you know, what I had suggested. If they do some science on the bones of these individuals, these burial grounds, a friend of mine just went and did a ceremony over some bones. Some Presbyterian church or something bought some land, and they started to dig to put the foundation down for the new building they want to put there. Come to find out, they saying it was a slave cemetery. Brother called me and I told him, you need to find a melanated geologist and let them do the test on the bones, and then you can find out how old those bones actually are. Because if those bones are older than 1492, the 1700s, it'll definitely prove that, you know, that ain't no slave cemetery. But the main problem is there is very little information in this country unless you strive to find some of the old books that were written by the French and they're in different languages, and you find out more things about this land, you know. But ain't nobody over here going to tell you the truth. Why? Because then they'll have – imagine, Pianchi, if your ancestors own whatever state you live in or was born in, and all those government buildings in that state, they have to start paying you rent. Imagine what that would do for your family in a year. In a year.
Well, what they got to show is how they came across it. It might have been a transaction.
Or it might have been murder.
Might have been.
You know why I'm saying that?
My father, then you're going to have to prove. Then you know there's the law of aggressive possession, right? You know there's the law of aggressive possession. That's how the West was formed. You had the landowners in the North, Maine, Massachusetts, and areas of that nature. And you have people that went and settled and worked those lands for 7 years, then they became theirs. That's aggressive possession. It still exists today. If you can go, if you can take a piece of public land and cordon it off with fences and maintain that for 7 years, it becomes yours. So we don't know if that's how it was arranged or whatever. We know one thing, that the Indians, quote, well, it's a legal term, Indian, as we talked about before. In many cases, they sold land to this government.
Now, you know, that's an issue even today, because you got some Native Americans within the tribe that they don't like the chief because they, you know, the chief's been selling out land or whatever. Before Blog Talk kicks us off, Warren, any statements to wrap it up today?
I feel like she
dropped off, but thanks for getting Gladys House on.
Yeah, she just texted me. She was actually in between working, so she had to go back to work. So she just texted me, let me know where she dropped off. I think this is interesting conversation, and I'm glad that we were able to have a decent conversation, because one thing we have to realize is that everybody has different understanding, different viewpoints, but it's good when we can come together and have conversation and agree to disagree or whatever without actually turning it into a very hostile environment. So I'm very appreciative of how things went today, and we need to have more conversation like this.
And we need to get an anthropologist on, too.
You know, another thing, too.
Let's get one on.
You know, another thing, too. This thing with Indians is very complicated. And one thing that makes it complicated, because when people be talking, they interchange words. They use black. They use Indian. They use African American.
Lay down the distinctions. I'm going to tell you very common distinctions. A lot of times people use the word Caucasian with white. But if you break it, if you look at it, white is basic, and for the terms of this conversation, would be European. European and Caucasian are two different animals. I'll give you an example.
Well, yeah, then you got to look at
Robert Kardashian, he was Caucasian.
Yeah.
He wasn't white. He was Caucasian. He came, which is basically people that are in the Caucasus region of Central Europe.
Well, you're right.
That's
and guess
from
what?
People
Russians,
that might live in Germany, England, Scotland, those places, or France.
Yeah,
those
and
are
Russians
Europeans
are what?
And white.
They're Asians. Yeah,
right.
Russians
Caucasians
are Asians.
Caucasians are Asians. They are
even,
not white.
And also, what you call Europe. It was no Europe, because Europe is not detached from the rest of Asia. It was Western Asia. You had Central Asia, Syria, Greece, Israel, Palestine, well, Palestine is a nation, Turkey, that was Central Asia.
Yeah. So, yeah, we need to get an anthropologist over there. But, yeah, everything you just said is correct.
If you read your, and people
before,
like to go back to the Bible real quick. In the Bible, it said, don't give your daughters to their sons and your sons or the daughter and steer away from the ways of the North. They wasn't talking about whites. The Cushites wasn't talking about whites. They was talking about Asians, because the Cushites was ethnocentric. They was against mixing. They wasn't talking about mixing with nobody with white skin. They were talking about mixing with them Egyptians and them Asians. Thank you.
All right, on that note, before Blog Talk kicks us off like they did yesterday, everybody have a good rest of the day.